Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Publish Subscribe Messaging from Edge to Enterprise. I'm Kurt Schwader, technical editor to Open Systems Media, and today's moderator with speaker David Barnett from Real-Time Innovations. Today's total briefing is scheduled for about 50 minutes, leaving a 10-minute Q&A at the end. Before we begin, I'd like to begin and run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. Clicking on the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box and Submit Question button allows you to participate in today's eCast. You simply type your question into the text box, submit it by clicking on the button. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're seeing the presentation and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll do our best to address them during the closing Q&A. If you have any questions or problems pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll talk about this a little more at the end. Distributed Data Service is a standard that governs how information source objects, called publishers, interact with information sinks, called subscribers. DDS is a data-centric approach that greatly simplifies complex distributed systems development. In this eCast, David Barnett will look at DDS and publish-subscribe messaging with comparisons and contrasts between operational systems and enterprise applications. David Barnett is a Vice President of Product Management and Market Development for Real-Time Systems. David has over 25 years of experience in the real-time software industry and an extensive background in product management and marketing. David has also held senior product management and marketing positions at Greenhill Software, Mentor Graphics Embedded Software Division, and Wind River Systems. He began his career as software engineer and manager at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where he was responsible for the implementation of several distributed real-time applications. David has a BA in computer science from the University of California at Berkeley. Dave?
Thank you, Kurt, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. So as Kurt just mentioned, in today's webinar, I'm going to review how the publish-subscribe communication paradigm can be applied to systems that include components that are deployed at the network edge, by which we mean outside the traditional enterprise data center. Some people refer to these as operational systems. They're different from conventional IT systems, which are typically deployed on servers or in the cloud. Operational systems can encompass a wide variety of different compute platforms, such as sensors, actuators, programmable logic controllers, mobile devices, and embedded systems. And they're found in a very wide range of industries and applications, including industrial automation, power generation and distribution, other utilities, asset tracking, various types of manned and unmanned vehicles, robotics, transportation infrastructure, communication systems, mining, aerospace, and defense, and these are all some of the application areas that RTI software has been used in. And what we're seeing is that increasingly these operational or edge systems are being integrated with traditional IT systems. The integration improves situational awareness and allows organizations to become more event-driven, responsive in real time. This improves their efficiency and availability by optimizing processes and reducing maintenance downtime. And it also provides a competitive speed advantage, and it enables the introduction of new value-added services, such as proactive maintenance, which we're beginning to see some customers roll out. So with this convergence going on, today's need is for a software communications infrastructure that can span an enterprise, not just in the data center, but also at systems deployed at the edge outside the data center. So in the webinar today, I'm going to cover how you can address that need. So I'll start with a brief overview of publish-subscribe communication and why it's well-suited to integrating edge to enterprise systems. I'll then talk about the specific technical challenges that operational systems pose and why that precludes the use of middleware implementations that were designed originally for data center-type applications. And mainly what I'll focus on today is reviewing how RTI's purpose-built publish-subscribe solution can address the requirements at the edge and is able to integrate systems across the enterprise and covering both the edge and enterprise. And at the conclusion, I'll answer any questions that you may have. So before I get started, I'll just provide a little introduction into RTI. So RTI is the leading supplier of communication middleware that's designed for operational systems. We have a very strong history of revenue growth and profitability. RTI has been very committed to industry standards, as Kurt mentioned at the beginning. We actively participate, I think, in what's now probably more than 10 different standards organizations, and we're on the board of directors of the Object Management Group, or OMG, and we are instrumental in defining the OMG's Data Distribution Service Standard, which is typically referred to as DDS. And our products today are completely standards-based, and we support a wide variety of standards, some of which I've listed here. So our publish-subscribe middleware technology itself is very widely proven. We've had a product offering for over 15 years, and our customers have used our software in nearly 500 unique system designs, and most of them are mission-critical systems. Collectively, our customers have deployed more than 300,000 copies of our software across, you know, all the industries that I mentioned at the beginning. And we're at the highest maturity level recognized by the U.S. Department of Defense, which is called Technology Readiness Level 9, or TRL 9, which means our technology has been proven in an operational environment. So before I discuss publish-subscribe specifically, I do want to provide a little bit of context with respect to traditional communication integration approaches. So in the past, most systems were developed using what I call point-to-point integration. So with this approach, applications or components directly communicate with each other. So this might be using a custom protocol, for example, on top of TCP/IP sockets. It could be using client-server approaches, such as remote procedure calls or remote method invocations. But there are a number of problems with this approach. First off, it tends to result in a lot of complexity. Because communication paths are embedded in individual applications, it makes them very tightly coupled. And over time, as systems grow in scale, they become very stovepipe and brittle, which makes maintenance extremely costly. Integration and upgrades are also very costly because when you add new applications, you have to go back and change existing applications so that the two can communicate, which is actually an order n squared integration problem. So if there's 10 components in a system, there's potentially 90 connections. If there's 50 components, there can be 2,450 connections, and if there's 100 components, there can be 9,990 connections. And because these components are tied to the interface of other components in their same system, it makes reuse difficult. And then finally, because data must be explicitly exchanged, there is very poor information sharing. This limitation is compounded by the cost of integrating applications, which discourages you from sharing information which may be useful but isn't essential, which constrains your situational awareness. So publish-subscribe overcomes these problems. Essentially, it provides an integration bus that decouples individual applications, so applications don't have to know anything about each other, only of the different topics or subjects of data that they process. So applications simply publish the data they produce and subscribe to the data they consume. They don't have to have any hard-coded knowledge of any other specific applications. So kind of looking at the simple example I depicted here, you know, a sensor just has to publish data to a sensor data topic. Likewise, a controller or actuator that needs that sensor data just has to subscribe to that data. An actuator could publish its status to a control to a status topic. And a supervisory control application that was kind of looking at the sensor data and looking at what the actuator published could just subscribe to sensor data and status, and then it could publish commands back out to the actuator, which just subscribes to commands. So none of these applications actually know specifically about any of the other applications. They just know about the types of data that they produce and consume. So the elegance of this approach is that no changes to existing applications are required when new components are added. So for example, if I add another sensor, it's going to publish sensor data, and any other application or subsystem that subscribes to sensor data is just going to get that automatically. Likewise, I could add a whole new type of application, such as I might want to add an HMI or display application, and it can just subscribe to sensor data and status and display that information. So as you can see, publish-subscribe greatly simplifies integration. We don't have an order n squared problem anymore. Now we just have, you know, what is effectively is an order n problem. Complexity is independent of the number of applications. Now, really, I just need to know about the different data types in my system. And this also really promotes information sharing, since subscribing to information is essentially free. I don't have to do anything to specifically enable another application to access my data. And, you know, as we talk about edge systems, publish-subscribe is specifically well-suited to them because they're inherently data and event-driven and typically require many-to-many communication between applications. Another way to look at publish-subscribe is each data topic in your system is effectively a virtual bus, so applications just have to connect to the topics that are relevant to them. So in this example, it might be sensor data for some applications, navigation data for other applications, and commands for yet a different set of applications. So kind of comparing the integration time, cost, and complexity of sort of the traditional point-to-point integration versus publish-subscribe, you can see that publish-subscribe can provide very significant economic advantages. Integration time and cost are no longer an exponential function of how many connections you have in a system. It's really the same regardless of when an application talks to one other application or if it talks to 1,000 other applications, and I'm actually going to show an example of that a little later. It also makes it much easier to reuse software because applications communicate by exchanging data. All you really have to do to reuse application or subsystem in a different system is just transform data between the different data models, and we actually provide an out-of-the-box solution for this I'll talk about towards the end of the webinar. So the traditional challenge of taking advantage of publish-subscribe communications at the network edge or in operational systems is that the requirements there are very different from those of traditional business applications, and most of the middleware solutions out there today were designed for the data center. They were not designed for the edge. So if you drill down and actually look at the specific requirements of edge systems or operational systems versus data center or IT systems, you'll see some pretty fundamental differences. So first off, you know, IT systems typically run in a data center or cloud on what tend to be very heavyweight centralized servers. And then physically remote applications or nodes just connect to the data center using a hub and spoke topology. This isn't usually feasible for edge systems because centralized servers might be impractical for logistical reasons, such as on a battlefield you don't want to haul a lot of servers around. They could also require too much size, weight, and power, or network bandwidth may be too limited to route all data traffic through a server somewhere. Edge systems also tend to have to be much more autonomous than IT systems. So, for example, if you plug a new device into a network or a device gets connected or disconnected, you don't want to have to call a system administrator whenever that happens because that could happen quite frequently. So, in general, operational systems have to be far more dynamic and support a more ad hoc environment than most IT systems. Edge systems also tend to require much higher performance. They have to reliably keep up with physical processes or other machines, whereas IT systems traditionally serve human processes and data doesn't really have to update faster than a person can process it. So there can be a several order of magnitude difference in the performance requirements of these systems. There's also very different implications to high performance and fault tolerant for edge and IT systems. So if an IT system is down for a few seconds, it might not even be noticed. And even a few minutes might just be an inconvenience, whereas with operational systems, particularly those that support very high-speed processes, you know, failure could be very catastrophic and in some cases irrecoverable, you know, even very short failures of less than a second. There's also platform and network differences between edge and IT systems. So typically in a data center, you can count on having pretty fast processors and fast and reliable networks, but at the edge, processors may be slower, partially because they need to be lower power often, and networks can also be lower bandwidth and less reliable. So you could be working over a wireless network or satellite networks or radio networks in some cases. So because of these pretty fundamental differences, it's really impossible to repurpose solutions designed for IT systems for use in edge systems. So I'm going to look a little bit at why that is and then how we overcome that with RTI's publish-subscribe middleware. So looking at traditional IT solutions, they generally have an architecture like that on the left, as I alluded to before. So they typically use a centralized process to broker communication between different applications or components that are part of your system. So when you publish data, you're effectively sending data to the broker, and then the data routes, the broker then routes that data to all the subscribers of that data. So this does match the server-centric approach of most traditional IT systems, Also, because you've got a broker and a server there, it tends to be a pretty system administration heavy approach, both to configure the broker and to manage the server, which can be a quite large server if you've got a high throughput system that hosts that broker. Typically, also in this type of environment, connections between the client applications, the individual publishers and subscribers, and the broker always use the connection-oriented TCP protocol, and TCP really only works well over reliable networks because it is connection-oriented and there's a lot of overhead associated with establishing those connections. And then the strategy used to achieve fault tolerance is typically to persist the broker's configuration to a permanent store of some sort, like a disk, you know, or by running a backup broker. But in either event, it's typically fairly slow to fail over, usually on the order of seconds or more, because the broker's state has to be either reloaded or synchronized in order to fail a system over. So really, edge systems require a completely different architecture. So RTI's approach is completely decentralized, so there's no brokers or servers in our solution. Our core messaging infrastructure is wholly contained in a library that can be embedded in each application. So then applications themselves communicate peer-to-peer. It could be components of an application, and there's no intermediaries. So an advantage of this is also that there's now no single point of failure in a system, so any failures are isolated to just that application or component. And moreover, we don't depend on the underlying network being reliable, and I'll talk about a little bit more about that later. So comparing these two approaches, you can see that there's some very different performance and scalability ramifications of the brokered approach on the left that traditional IT systems use and the decentralized peer-to-peer approach on the right that RTI uses for edge and operational systems. So with the brokered approach, every message makes at least two network hops. There's from the publisher to the broker and then from the broker to the subscriber, where with peer-to-peer communication, there's just one network hop from the publisher to the subscriber. So latency is significantly lower, and obviously the effect, impact of this would be increased as networks become slower. In addition, with the brokered approach, latency also tends to degrade when your message volumes go up because the broker has to start queuing data if it can't keep up. So ultimately, that means the throughput is limited by the capacity of the broker and the server that hosts it, and the broker effectively becomes a bottleneck and choke point in the system. So the peer-to-peer approach doesn't have these problems because there is no central point through which all messages pass. So latency is really independent of the message volume, of the aggregate message volume itself. And then total throughput is only constrained really by the network infrastructure, not by any software in the system. So this makes the peer-to-peer approach much better suited to real-time systems, which have to keep up with incoming data, you know, in general no matter what. So, in fact, with real-time systems or operational systems, latency actually becomes more critical when data and event volumes go up because that usually means that something extraordinary is going on and you need to be very, very astute to what's happening. So it's a bad time to sort of queue data and slow down. So looking at some real performance tests here, this graph shows latency in microseconds as a function of message size. And what you can see is on InfiniBand, which is a very high-speed network, our latency is just about 14 microseconds for 256-byte messages and scales really well as message size goes up. So we start at 14 microseconds for 256 bytes, but we only double to 28 microseconds when you increase the message size by a factor of 32 to 8 kilobytes. If you look at Ethernet, our latency is just about 50 microseconds at 256-byte messages, and it goes up about 3x when you increase the message size by 32x to 8 kilobytes. So this is a little bit degrades slightly more than InfiniBand, but that's because the network itself is much slower and lower capacity. As you can see, it's really the network that's the limiting factor here and not the middleware itself. So this shows performance from a throughput perspective. So what you can see kind of on the bottom, where you see sort of at the 1 gigabyte line, really regardless of message size, we can pretty much saturate a gigabit Ethernet for any message size longer than 256 bytes. And you can see we can go over 7 gigabytes on an InfiniBand network. So again, it's the network that's the bottleneck here. It's not the middleware. Then with this graph, we're looking at the same data as the previous graph, but instead of looking at it in terms of megabits per second or, you know, aggregate data that you're sending, we're actually looking at it in terms of messages per second. So here you can see at 256 bytes, we can do over 450,000 messages per second with Ethernet and over 2 million messages a second using InfiniBand, again, with the network being the limiter, not the middleware, since we are saturating the gigabit Ethernet at this point. So if you compare this to brokered middleware, it's important to recognize that throughput is reported differently because we're peer-to-peer. So brokered solutions, typically when they talk about throughput, it's usually limited to about 50,000 messages per second, but that's through the broker. So that means it's effectively your total system capacity, whereas the data that we're showing here is per application. So if you have two independent pairs of communicating applications, each can simultaneously achieve the results that we're showing here. So there's no broker limiting. The broker isn't the performance bottleneck or the point at which you measure performance. It's individual applications, and your system performance is effectively unlimited. So another scalability optimization we support in our solution is support for multicast communication. So with multicast, you only have to send a message once from the publisher, regardless of how many subscribers you have. So when the publisher sends the message, the switch itself automatically replicates and routes that message to each subscriber. So I've got kind of a little animation here that shows that. So as you can see, publisher is sending it once, and the switch itself is actually doing the replication. So by default, multicast does use the UDP protocol, not the connection-oriented and reliable TCP protocol I mentioned before. So UDP itself isn't reliable at the transport layer, but if you do need reliable delivery of data with multicast, RTI does provide our own reliability protocol on top of UDP, in addition to supporting best effort if you don't need to get every message. So sometimes best effort delivery is fine and you don't need reliability. If you have very fast-changing data, you're sending, you know, audio, video streams, you could already be on the next frame by the time you're able to resend the previous frame. So basically, whether a subscriber is best effort or reliable can be selected on a per-subscriber basis. So you could have some subscribers maybe are archiving or recording data, so you don't want to lose any data for them. Other subscribers might be displaying information, so they can be best effort because if I lose a sample or so, there's not significant consequence to that in the display. So this chart shows how scalable multicast communication can be. So this example was using 200-byte messages. So they were sent from one publisher to up to almost 1,000 different subscribers. And you can see, and this was reliable, by the way, so you can see that there was very little impact on per application throughput as the number of subscribers increased. And just, you know, I mentioned earlier that there's really no constraint on aggregate message volume in a system. So you know, at the peak number of subscribers done in this test, we were sending through the system about 441 million messages a second were being delivered across all the subscribers in the system. So again, the publisher was only sending about 600,000 messages a second, but because there were close to 1,000 subscribers to that data, each receiving the data, the aggregate message volume was significantly higher. So, you know, the combination of the peer-to-peer architecture and multicast communications makes systems extremely scalable. So I mentioned earlier that edge or operational systems tend to require much more autonomous behavior than traditional IT systems and also tend to be much more dynamic and ad hoc. So to support this, RTI provides a built-in discovery capability. We call it automatic discovery. So with automatic discovery, applications automatically detect each other's presence when they're connected to the network, and the middleware automatically establishes those communication paths. So you don't need any system administration to plug a new application or subsystem or device into your network. So effectively, applications themselves become plug and play. And applications also detect when communicating peers are no longer available, so it allows subscribers to automatically fail over to a backup publisher if a primary publisher of a specific type of data becomes inaccessible. And for applications that need it, we do provide complete visibility into the discovery process so applications can monitor system health, or if they don't want to use the automatic built-in high availability features. You can take advantage of being able to see presence of different systems, and you can manage high availability at the application level. So automatic failover itself is managed via one of our quality of service controls. So there are very extensive quality of service or QoS controls in our middleware. And what QoS does is it makes it very easy to integrate applications that may have disparate performance requirements and capabilities. As we talked about, this is very common in the case where you've got very high performance systems at the edge talking to more human performance systems, in a traditional data center enterprise application. So basically each application has fine-grained control over both its own timing requirements as well as whether deadlines are being met or missed in a system. So in this example here that I've got on this slide, each publisher and subscriber is basically specifying the rate at which it produces or needs data. And then so the middleware will automatically filter data so that only the required data will be delivered to a specific application. And if data, for some reason, deadlines are being missed in a system or you're not getting enough data, an application will be notified of that. So again, looking at the example, if a sensor is publishing data at 1 kilohertz, you know, a supervisory control application might just need that data at 100 hertz so it can just subscribe at 100 hertz. It'll get effectively every 10th sample. And a display application may only want to display that, you know, once per second, so it's only going to get one update per second. But all this filtering is happening automatically. Applications just have to say what they need, and we basically take care of making sure that that's what they get. So this example I'm filtering by time, but applications can also filter based on message content. So, for example, an alarm application might just want to subscribe to sensor data that exceeds some threshold or to an error status coming from the controller for an actuator. Also key here is that the publisher doesn't need to know what a subscriber is doing, so it doesn't even need to know what fields of a message the subscriber might be filtering on. So publishers and subscribers here are completely decoupled. It's the middleware that's doing all the matching and filtering. So as I mentioned earlier, operational systems may run over a very different variety of wired and wireless networks. So to support this, we do support a very broad range of transports. So we support shared memory for very fast communication within a node where you have shared memory. UDP, when you're going off-node, is our default communication scheme. It provides very efficient communication over a local area network and over most wireless networks. And UDP, as I mentioned earlier, also supports multicast, and it gives you more control over real-time behavior than TCP, which doesn't really have any give you any real-time control. UDP also works well over disconnected and intermittent networks since it's not connection-oriented. So if the network gets reconnected, you don't have to reestablish a connection at the TCP level. That said, we do support TCP for enterprises that restrict routing of UDP traffic, which we occasionally see. And for authentication and encryption and secure communication, we support TLS and DTLS. Also, we do that as part of our internet transport, which lets you communicate over public networks and clouds. We have a set of low bandwidth plugins I'll talk a little bit more about later, but they support working over extremely slow or low bandwidth networks. And we do have a plugin interface that allows you to easily integrate additional transports into a system. Individual applications themselves can communicate over multiple transports concurrently. So, for example, an application can send data over a shared memory network to local subscribers at the same time it's sending data over UDP to remote subscribers, or we also provide a routing service capability that can bridge between networks. So, for example, within a local machine, every application can just use shared memory, and you can deploy a routing service to then bridge between that shared memory and the external network using, for example, UDP or TCP or TLS, for example, if you need security. On top of transport flexibility, we're also very wire efficient, which enables very high performance behavior and also reduces network overhead. Again, this is particularly valuable when you have low bandwidth networks. So we provide two key optimizations compared to most published subscribe solutions that are designed for traditional IT systems. So the first is that we allow message types to be predefined, and then those definitions, for example, kind of what's in the blue at the top, are only exchanged once at discovery time rather than each message. So I'm basically sending the metadata just once when applications come online and are discovered, not with each message. So then when I go send the message, all I need to do is send the data itself because the field names and field types of that data have already been sent. So kind of looking at the bottom, most traditional IT systems just send all the metadata along with the data in each message. So you've got, you know, typically most folks tell me they actually have much more metadata going across their network than data, since there can be more information describing the data than the data itself in each message. Second thing we do is we do send the data itself in a very compact binary format. Actually, I've got a chart here that was done by a university for a European project, and they looked at the encoding type that we support, which is the box that's circled here called CDR, Common Data Representation. That's what we use on the wire. And what you could see is the CDR encoding, you know, is literally more than an order of magnitude more efficient than other popular serialization or encoding formats like JSON and XML. So in this particular case, it's 20 times better than XMLs would typically be used for SOAP. So the network overhead is very low. You can't even see the bar in this particular graph. So this efficiency is one of the reasons that we're very well suited for disadvantaged networks like radio or satellite links. We do have some other features that make us well suited for disadvantaged networks either. So I did mention the reliability protocol earlier that we support. So the reliability protocol is very highly tunable. So you can tune it both for low bandwidth networks, but also for very high delay networks like a satellite network, where you get, you know, orders of magnitude more delay than you would over a typical local area network. So you can tune the reliability protocol for that. And again, we do support best effort delivery for cases in which some message loss is acceptable. We also provide control over publisher and subscriber queues and the depth of those queues, which controls how much historic data then gets sent or received when you have an intermittent connection or if your throughput happens to exceed the available bandwidth. Messages can also be set to expire when the data in them becomes stale. And we do support traffic shaping to allow you to control how network bandwidth is scheduled or allocated across multiple applications. And then for extremely low bandwidth networks, which we typically see with radio networks, we do provide an optional set of low bandwidth plugins that can compress message headers or even compress message contents depending on how you want to trade off the performance of serialization versus the overhead on the network itself. So those are configurable. So similar support for limited networks, we also can support resource-constrained platforms such as embedded systems. So memory utilization can be completely deterministic with no dynamic memory allocation at all, so you know exactly how much resource you're going to use. And we also have a small footprint edition of our publish-subscribe messaging that can fit in less than 200 kilobytes of memory. And as I mentioned earlier, typically with embedded systems, you don't want to have any system administration. So you know, with our automatic discovery and the fact that we don't use a broker or server, no system administration is required in a system. And we do have very comprehensive operating system support, so we support all the leading embedded operating systems. And I didn't mention earlier, but we do support all the common programming languages like C and C++, which are still the most widely used languages for embedded systems development. Perhaps one of the most powerful capabilities in our publish subscribe implementation is support for what we call data centricity. So data centricity extends the traditional publish subscribe paradigm by allowing applications to directly read and write data objects instead of just sending and receiving messages about data, which is what you do with the traditional publish subscribe system. So to an application, what this can look like is effectively as if you're sharing a database. So each topic in your system correlates to a table a database table, and then each object of the type of that topic effectively then becomes a row in the table. So from a programming standpoint, it's very much like using a database. However, there are some very significant differences from a traditional database, of course. And the first is that updates are automatically pushed to subscribers, so you do have event-driven and real-time behavior with our solution. So effectively, when you write an update to a data object, that then gets published to everyone subscribing to that. The second key difference is that data objects are cached within each publisher and subscriber. There isn't a central database or repository of data, so it's still a completely decentralized solution. So that's why we call this a data space, as you see on the slide, and not a database. It's not a centralized solution. And then in cases where you do need to persist data, for example, when applications might be connected over a low bandwidth network, we do provide an optional persistence service, but this persistence services or instances of the persistence service don't have to run centrally. They can be distributed across the network, both for load balancing and for high availability purposes. So data centricity is particularly valuable for edge systems because it provides a single source of truth regarding the state of your system, where, of course, the data in your system represents its state. So because edge systems can be highly dynamic, there needs to be a way for a late joining or a returning application to receive a current snapshot regarding what the state of the world is. So with our middleware, late joining applications can automatically receive the most recent value of all subscribed data objects, which includes any required historic data. So we let you configure whether you just want the latest value of each object or you can actually request a history, and get the last 10 values, for example, of a specific data object. So what this does, because state now is maintained by the middleware, it's not maintained by any application, it ensures that even in a very large scale and dynamic system, that state is consistent. So the middleware provides that single source of truth about state in your system. So this diagram provides an overview of our publish-subscribe platform. So as I mentioned at the start of the webinar, and Kurt alluded to, we do support standard interfaces and protocols. So for application programming, we support both the DDS and JMS standards, and our on-the-wire protocol also complies with the standard known as RTPS, which is both an IEC and OMG standard. We also provide adapters that can integrate with applications that use third-party JMS systems, relational databases, Microsoft Excel, and SDK that lets you adapt even customer legacy protocols. We also provide a lot of valuable tools and runtime services. So this includes tools for visualizing and analyzing a system's topology, monitoring a system's health and performance. You can record live data, and you can replay recorded data. And there's a lot more information about all of these components on our website. So when it comes to operational systems, we find that many developers are still creating their own middleware. And typically, it's because they think that commercial solutions cannot satisfy their unique requirements. So while this is true for middleware that was designed for traditional IT systems, it's certainly not the case with RTI's implementation, as I hope I've explained today. It is purpose-built to meet the requirements of operational systems. So a recent market survey that was done by an organization known as Embedded Market Forecasters actually did confirm this supposition. So what the survey found was that systems developed using RTI middleware actually outperformed roll-your-own solutions. If you look at the bar on the left there, they were also more likely to satisfy functional requirements and were delivered closer to the expected schedule than were even, you know, custom-built roll-your-own solutions. On the other hand, what you do see is that systems developed that were using other commercial middleware, so not RTI, they didn't fare so well. And again, this is because in most cases, this other middleware was middleware designed for IT systems, not for edge or operational systems, so it really wasn't appropriate to the system's requirements. So this report, you can go either to the Embedded Market Forecasters website, or we also have a hyperlink from RTI's website if you actually want to download this report and drill a little deeper into the data and some of the findings there. So kind of to summarize what I've covered today, so publish-subscribe provides a very powerful integration paradigm that eases integration and promotes information sharing. However, traditional implementations that were designed for data center type environments don't address the operational systems that are deployed at the network edge, and these systems require purpose-built solutions. So kind of looking back at the table I presented earlier about the unique requirements of these systems, we can now go see how RTI solution maps to these requirements. So we address the deployment environment with a decentralized architecture and peer-to-peer communication. We support publish-subscribe over multicast to address the large-scale sort of event-driven requirements. Automatic discovery to support very dynamic and ad hoc systems without the need for system administration. We have a very efficient wire protocol and transport flexibility for use over disadvantaged networks and other low bandwidth networks. Obviously very low latency and high throughput, as I presented on the graphs, as well as extensive control over quality of service to both meet the needs of very high performance applications together with the needs of what might be lower performance, more traditional enterprise applications that need the same data. There's no single point of failure in our architecture, so systems are effectively nonstop. We have built-in failover, and data centricity ensures that in the dynamic system, you still have a consistent view of the world, a single source of truth, and applications don't get out of sync with each other, which could also be a source of failure in systems. And we support a very wide range of platforms, including all your traditional enterprise systems, Windows, Mac OS, Linux, other Unix variants, as well as all the leading embedded operating systems. So if you want to learn more, please feel free to contact RTI. We'd be happy to come in, give you an on-site demo, or do a lunch and learn and discuss how our solution can map to your specific requirements. We also have a number of useful downloads on our website. So kind of what you see in the upper right here is what we call our Shapes demo, and the Shapes demo provides a no-programming way to kind of learn about the features that I've discussed here so you can see how data centricity works. You can play around with different quality of service properties and see what they do, and there's actually a nice tutorial that kind of walks you through all the different features of the product. And again, you don't have to do any programming at all for this. It's all just through through a GUI. If you do want to do programming, we do have a complete free trial on our website of our complete product you can download. And we do provide free licenses for research and IR&D purposes, as well as for universities. And then we have a lot of videos, white papers, and webinar replays like for this one on our website as well. So please check that out to learn more. And there's also a lot of industry-specific content there as well if you want to learn more about how our solution maps to your specific requirements. So that is what I had today. So I want to, again, thank you all for joining and turn it back over to Kurt.
Very good. Thank you, Dave. We've got a really nice Q&A session. We have some questions coming in, and again, we encourage you to continue to submit your questions. Dave, maybe you can talk about your solution from an architectural perspective. Does the DDS solution you have, does it include a network daemon, or how is it implemented, the middleware?
Yeah, so we do not use a network daemon. So our solution, the core libraries can be completely embeddable, so you don't need any kind of daemon. So every application is really autonomous and doesn't depend on any other infrastructure. So we do have some services that you can optionally run, but none of those are required in a system. So again, if you have a bunch of applications communicating over shared memory on a single node, you can use, if you want, our routing service to bridge between that kind of local shared memory network, you know, and an outside network if you choose, but that's completely optional and really just based on your requirements and topology.
Okay. And I had a question just on the overall OMG framework and what you're talking about today in terms of integrating the edge with the enterprise. You talked about the decentralized approach and some library capabilities for the edge side. Is that part of the OMG spec? Is that still compliant, or is that an additional tuned capability to integrate the edge with what the standard is?
So in terms of the application interfaces, that all is completely standards compliant. You know, the implementation, the standard doesn't dictate how the solution is actually implemented. So, you know, clearly our implementation is optimized for the environment, you know, that we're targeting with these, you know, edge or operational systems. So there's very different, you know, different implementations of the standard can have very different characteristics. So what I described here today was our implementation. Other implementations will vary.
Okay. We have a number of questions on networks, so let's just dive in. I'll try to go from the general to the specific here. You mentioned a plug-in in one of your slides. How hard is it to write a custom plug-in for the environment? Can you give an idea of the functions, the kinds of steps they would go through to write a custom plug-in? Is it just initialization, send, receive, define my QoS parameters, and I'm done, or how does that work?
Unfortunately, I'm actually going to have to defer that question because I myself have not used that, but I think if we captured information about the question itself, I will definitely have somebody that's used that get back.
Sure, okay. And is there
a response to that? I apologize for that.
You mentioned a lot of stuff on your website. Is that part of it? Are there white papers that might maybe cover that or something? Perhaps?
Yeah, there might be white papers. Also, the documentation is available, so if you go to the site, you can download the free trial, obviously, to get the full docs, or you can go to community.rti.com is the website, and I think one of the links that you'll see on the left there is for the documentation, so you can actually read and search the documentation without having to download the full product if you just want to look at the interfaces, for example, for this.
Okay. There's a couple of questions on the multicast support. One is asking about the multicast protocol. Is it reliable? If it is, what kind of retransmission mechanisms do you use on top of UDP? I think you mentioned you have a reliability layer on top of UDP. Does that also work in the multicast environment?
Yes, correct. So we support reliable unicast and reliable multicast with UDP. So the reliability protocol does fully support reliable multicast.
Okay.
And we basically let you tune things like heartbeats, for example, or acknowledgments. So, you know, typically it's based on trading off, you know, the network overhead of the reliability protocol versus, you know, how quickly you resend data. But there's, you know, probably, I'm guessing, you know, 10 different tunable parameters we give you so you can optimize it for your specific sort of latency versus throughput versus network overhead trade-offs.
I see. Okay, and a related question regarding multicast support, does it require the IP multicast capability underneath, or can you use this multicast middleware on top of other network topologies that may not have the concept of a multicast group?
Yes, so where our solution is actually independent of UDP itself, so we have, you know, as I showed earlier, we support a wide variety of transports of which UDP multicast is one, but there's no inherent dependency on UDP multicast. So, you know, as I mentioned, you could run over shared memory. We have customers that are, you know, running over backplanes or star fabric, or, you know, I showed some InfiniBand benchmarks earlier.
Right.
So, you know, our core itself is completely independent of the underlying network. So if you're using something that we don't support today, then either we can implement for you or you can implement, you know, a custom transport to sort of map to your network itself, including those that support multicast or multicast type features. But multicast is certainly not required. So if you have just, you know, a network that's only capable of unicast, we can support that as well.
All right. Let's see. In industrial environments, CAN and Profibus communication protocols are widely used. How does this methodology different than CAN Profibus protocols? I'll interpret this question, and the question asker can can chime back in. I think they're asking how do you implement this middleware on top of CAN and Profibus kinds of solutions? It kind of gets back to, do they have to write some custom things, or maybe you provide those kinds of capabilities?
Yeah, so there's really two ways we could integrate with CAN and Profibus. You know, we're typically a much higher level, you know, if you look at the OSI stack than CAN and Profibus. So there's two ways customers have done integrations. One is using our routing service, which I mentioned earlier. So if you have existing applications that sit on a CAN or Profibus, you can write an adapter to those applications that basically bridge between the Profibus, CAN or Profibus, and our infrastructure. So they basically will, you know, it's effectively a bridge between the two environments. You could also run our infrastructure over CAN or Profibus as well. And we do have some folks in our services group that have pretty good experiences, have worked with customers on these buses. So we can definitely provide some more information if you're interested on kind of what customers have done in the past.
Great. Maybe this is a good time to ask a question down the way here. There was a question about this integration between enterprise and edge is a really interesting concept. So you mentioned kind of a couple of examples. Are there multiple examples of people doing this today? And what kind of applications are they using them in? Is it like assembly line kind of applications or what?
Yes, I'd say pretty much all of our customers are doing this today. We've got about, you know, 500 projects right now, sort of active, unique designs, and you know, a few of those are pure enterprise systems, mostly in the financial services market. But most of the rest are both, you know, combination enterprise and edge systems. So, you know, typical applications, you know, would be, you know, for example, unmanned vehicles. You know, we actually can run in the vehicle. We can run in the ground control station. We can be used to integrate, you know, the ground control station with the, you know, command and control systems or the rest of the enterprise itself. Definitely in industrial control, that's been, you know, a very hot market for this type of solution as they seek to sort of integrate what have been pretty disparate, you know, DCS and SCADA systems. So that's another market where we see this. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the power generation space today, both with, you know, kind of alternative power as well as trying to better integrate the grid itself to get more operational visibility. So I'd be hard-pressed to think of an industry in which this they were not trying to do this right now.
Sure.
You know, there's just a lot more intelligence being built into all the sensors today, and, you know, the real challenge people have is, you know, how do you actually, you know, move and take advantage of that
right.
data. So the data is often there, but, you know, the infrastructure to actually capitalize on that data is not there.
Okay. So here's a question. Have you applied the DDS approach in a real-time application with routers using the precision timing protocol, IEEE 1588?
I am not sure on that one, so we'll have to get back to the questioner on that.
Okay, great. How does the message indicate that UAV-1 is of type float and UAV-2 is of type altitudes as an example? So I think they're getting at how do you specify the QoS parameters or the types of the data that you can get from a publisher in DDS?
Sure. So there's two ways to do that. One way is you can actually predefine that at compile time. So you can basically specify what your data types look like using, you know, WSDL or XML or the OMG IDL language, and then basically compile that right into your application. And then that information is then exchanged at discovery time. Or when you go actually create your messages at runtime, we have a dynamic API basically to let you go specify that for this topic, my data looks like this, and you can basically specify your schema at runtime then if it's more dynamic and you don't know what it is at compile time.
Oh, I see.
So okay. We support both of those techniques to do it. Again, QoS can be specified either via a configuration file that gets, you know, loaded by your application at runtime. And again, we do also provide an API, so applications can also directly manipulate QoS. So there are, you know, some QoS that are actually mutable after you start up a system. So, for example, content filter, for example, as a system is running, you might change the data that you care about. So, for example, if I'm on a mobile device, you know, I might care about, you know, data that is close to me. So as I'm moving around, I might dynamically change my filters so that I'm only going to receive data, you know, that's in, say, you know, a couple hundred feet or kilometers of my current position, and I'm going to update that filter dynamically as my position changes so I'm not getting a lot of spurious data in a region that I don't care about.
Right, I see. Okay, here's a question. Is this session available as downloadable podcast? As a matter of fact, yes, it is. There are five previous DDS podcasts to this that are sessions like this that you can also get. We'll talk about that a little bit more at the end. We're running short on time here. Here's a question about the when you talk about the bus, and this actually was covered in some of the other previous DDS sessions. The concept of a bus is different than your typical embedded engineer thinks of as a bus. You know, I think of a backplane, you know, connectivity thing. And what this question is asking is, who is hosting the edge bus? I guess the information, the centralized information that's coming from the edge, is it in the infrastructure? Maybe you can talk a little bit about what you should think of logically when you talk about the term bus in the DDS sense, and then more to the specific question about where is the information being held at the edge.
Yeah, so really when we talk about, you know, a bus, we're really talking about, you know, something that's the software equivalent of a traditional hardware bus. So applications, you know, can connect to the bus and exchange data just like you might be able to plug boards into a typical backplane. But, you know, one of the things that is kind of a hard concept to grasp is that, you know, with our publish-subscribe solution, because we're completely decentralized, the bus is really virtual. So the bus is constructed dynamically at runtime based on the participating applications. So there is sort of no kind of central database or broker where you would think of, you know, especially with IT systems, you know, that's typically where the bus gets instantiated, is in some dedicated piece of software. In our case, the bus is instantiated virtually, you know, based on the applications that have to be communicating. And as I kind of alluded to in, when I talked about data centricity, each application itself actually maintains a data cache. So as new applications join or leave the bus, they can get historic data from the caches of those applications, you know, that were already up and running on the bus, or even that new application that, you know, might have joined a system, maybe just a network. The application might not have been down. Maybe a network was disconnected and you reconnect the network. All the applications will automatically resynchronize with each other when they connect. So applications on one network will get data from applications on the other network. They'll basically exchange that when you reconnect the system. But the bus is, for the most part, virtual. The only exception to that is if you use one of our optional services like the persistence service, which does have the ability to persist data outside of any individual publisher or subscriber. You know, in the case where you don't want publishers and subscribers, where you do want more of a broker-type model, you don't want individual publishers and subscribers, for example, fulfilling requests for historic data from late-joining subscribers, for example. So, you know, this tends to be common where you have, you know, either applications that might have very short life cycles, so they maybe come and go, and you want to decouple the life cycles of kind of subscribers from publishers, or if you have very low bandwidth networks and you don't want to kind of go over the network to get data from the publisher. Or it may be that you have a huge, you know, very large number of potential subscribers and you just don't want the reliability protocol overhead on the publisher. So there are some cases in which you might want to use more of a traditional physical instantiation, but in most cases the bus itself is actually completely virtual.
Okay. Well, very good. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our session. We'd like to thank everyone for attending today's eCast and all those good questions. And again, thank you to Dave for taking the time to be with us and share some really important insights on DDS for Edge and Enterprise Applications and Integration. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen. And like I said, the audio-only podcast versions will also be available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of the Open Systems Media eCast available online. I'd like to also remind you that there is another RTI DDS webinar coming up. It's also there on your screen. Also invite you to participate in the Multicore underscore tech channel at Open Systems Media, where we follow RTI and other multi-network, multi-protocol, multi-core companies. You simply follow Multicore underscore tech on Twitter and join the Multicore Tech LinkedIn group. I'd like to thank you all for attending and have a great day.